This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, if you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh, and our guest on The Breakfast Grill this morning, Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of the Sarawak Report. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Claire.
Sharad, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Okay, we'll begin inviting all of you to be part of this conversation. Remember, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We have already an avalanche of tweets and WhatsApp messages. We'll get to that, I think, in just a moment. First of all, I think a lot of people are expressing their gratitude towards you for being part of what's been quite an extraordinary journey for Malaysia the last couple of years. Many people wanting to know why. Why is it? We know that you were born in the Crown Colony of Sarawak in 1960. You spent 8 years or so there. Your parents were working there. Your mother was a midwife, I believe. But why did that commitment to the Malaysian story remain with you?
Well, as you say, I was born and spent my early years in Malaysia. So, you know, that's part of my heart, you know, and I have very fond memories. And I think it was one of those stories where you as a journalist start at the grassroots, at the ground, and there was something that was wrong and very troubling. And as someone who'd grown up in Borneo, I probably knew more about it than other outsiders, you know, reporting from, say, well, London, where I was. So those issues were to do with the situation with indigenous people there, the general situation facing people in Sarawak, and of course the massive unnecessary deforestation. So I felt a conscience, really, that I had to at least do what I could as a journalist on these issues. And so that's where I started. I wasn't expecting to end up, in a high-grade finance story, taking on a prime minister, frankly, but that's sometimes where things go when you start at the grassroots on a story.
Well, Claire, you founded Sarawak Report in 2010, and that started off as a blog, you said, for an environmental crisis in Sarawak. And over the years, that morphed into a platform that uncovered what some say could be one of the largest financial scandals globally. So what got you on the 1MDB story?
Well, as you say, it was a terrific story. And, you know, we're all journalists. And when you suddenly realize that you have got your scent on what is clearly a global story, it's an exciting challenge. And I couldn't resist that challenge of a story of a lifetime. And so I went for it like any of us would have done. It's been a very, very tough one. This is not just a Malaysian story. It's a story with enormous global significance. And I think through this test case, I've been able to expose all sorts of issues of international concern, really, how the global financial system has been facilitating the sort of corruption and the sort of money laundering on a vast scale that should never have been possible. And we need to address that globally, why it was possible that a place like Sarawak, Sabah, and indeed Malaysia could be pillaged in this way and the money extracted, without any questions until I exploded the story of 1MDB. There weren't any regulators after these transactions. Mm.
There's a question from one of our listeners that asks whether you received threats and harassment, and at any point in time did you feel that they were too much and that did you want to throw in the towel? That was just not worth it.
Well, you know, the trouble with threats and harassment is they do focus your attention. And of course, I think they were rather counterproductive because, no, I wasn't going to give in to threats. It had the opposite effect, I'm afraid. I was determined I wasn't going to be bullied. That made me carry on.
Well, the stakes of the 1MDB game is obviously high. I mean, look at the amount of money involved. Was there a time when a carrot or two were dangled in front of you, Claire, for your silence or perhaps a change in your narrative?
Well, I have to say I'm quite proud. A great deal of money has obviously been given to other people to try and undermine me, discredit me and all the rest. Nobody ever seemed to think that it was worth coming and offering me money, actually. So, no. is the short answer.
Okay, now that you're here in Malaysia, and I think it's seen as quite an extraordinary return to the country, you're on the front page of The Star, and the headline reads, "You're amazing, Malaysia." You give Malaysians credit for these extraordinary changes that happened in the last week and so. But there are other individuals who are part of the story, and they're meeting with the Prime Minister and so on and so forth. Will you be meeting with the Prime Minister or the Council of Eminent Persons or anybody in government on this trip?
I don't think so, certainly not formally. That was certainly not my purpose in coming. And, you know, this is an extremely busy period of transition. So, I really would, be very much in favour of leaving, your leaders to get on with their very, very pressing business. That was not why I came.
Yeah, you're quite a chili padi. So that's a term, Malaysian term for spicy chili. In 2009, you were sent home by an armed group of officers. And of course, there was the warrant for your arrest here, issued in 2015. And despite all of this, you remain committed to exposing Malaysian stories and bringing it to an audience here. Why?
The reasons we've looked at, I come back to the matter that these are globally of concern. Mm. But there's another reason. I actually always had confidence in Malaysia, there was so much despair, but within that, so many Malaysians who had such a clear idea of how things should be done, and such a passion for reform, and so many, ideas about what should be done to reverse the situation. And that gave me enormous confidence in you. And if I've thought that this was a hopeless situation, it was a hopeless country, and that you wouldn't be able to get what you have achieved this last week, then I probably would have. That would have been what would have made me give up, actually. But I never felt that. I always had the confidence that things could be done. And so I didn't give up.
There's, of course, questions. I mean, you have your fans, and there are many of them. You also have your detractors, people that say that the standards of journalism could be better, that, in fact, you deal with or trade in some levels of sensationalism, that we had a tweet in saying that you had said that the Agong, the king of the country, was Rosmah's very good friend. I think you said this in a piece recently. Is that something that troubles you? I mean, is that how do you deal with your detractors who say that you in fact have been much more provocateur than you've been a journalist?
Oh, well, I have to say this has been a sensational story, I don't want to play it down. I think people needed to know how sensational it was, what was going on in Malaysia, and how jaw-dropping some of the corruption that I was exposing was. So because of this, I allowed myself the occasional exclamation mark, just actually to try and, remind people who had got used to something that they shouldn't be getting used to in terms of corruption in high places, that this was not acceptable. It shouldn't be acceptable. I'm not somebody who's ever been the sort of journalist that goes into, too much private lives or any of those things. That's not what interests me. So I focused generally on the political side, except when, you have had excesses within families in high places, and then it became relevant to look at perhaps some of those issues, particularly to do with ostentatious extreme wealth amongst rich families that were, questionable in their wealth. On the Agong, I think I was probably stating a fact. I'd been given that information on very good sources, and, why shouldn't they be good friends? That was a Facebook comment. Yes, obviously, I have been upsetting people because I've been challenging authority.
This, of course, has been a rather opaque situation for Malaysia or generally. And what danger is there for a journalist like yourself working within the constraints that you have? You're largely a one-person show, I understand, that you might be fed information by those who either want to trip you up by giving you false information or lead you down a path that, that supports their agenda. How did you triangulate information? How did you deal with people trying to push their agenda through you?
Yes, well, I think, everyone who's doing this sort of journalism, we all face that same challenge. You always have to test a story, and it can be very worrying. You know, you can sit on a story for a long time wondering if you can publish it because, you know, you haven't been able to cross-reference it. So, you know, I think I stand by my record in that, you know, there haven't been serious challenges to the bulk of what I've written, and indeed the entire 1MDB story and many of the related scandals that I've looked at have been entirely vindicated, I would say, hence where we are today. But I had to make some scary judgment calls on a number of my stories, not least because I'm under-resourced. Other people's agendas, you know, I think you just go by what the information tells you, really. And of course, you always know where someone's coming from, and that's fine.
Well, Claire, in 2016, the Malaysian government then dismissed the 1MDB scandal as a politically motivated anti-Najib campaign, which sought to use Western media. And officials here also accused you of being unprofessional and working with the opposition then. And there were questions raised on the funding behind Sarawak Report as well. Your comments on this?
Well, there wasn't any funding behind Sarawak Report except for my very patient husband, who luckily was able to keep the household going. So thank you very much, Andrew. Apart from donations as well to keep the site running, for which I'm intensely grateful. As far as, you know, all these accusations have been linked to the opposition, again, I certainly talked to the opposition. And, of course, the opposition was a lovely ragtag of different entities that have come together over the last 2 years. So, it was hardly a single entity. And indeed, I was trying to talk to people from BN, perhaps less successfully. So really, I was just a journalist following a story, to be honest. And of course, I was going to get those kinds of accusations.
We're speaking to Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of the Sarawak Report. Next up, we address the question of Taib Mahmud and Sarawak. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and our guest on The Breakfast Grill this morning is Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of The Sarawak Report. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We have, in fact, a huge number of comments and questions. We're going to get to them shortly. But Claire, I want to begin with the question of Sarawak, since in many ways that's where it all began. Not just for you, but for the country in terms of the scandal in some way underscored or what's happened over the last 2 weeks. The question of Taib Mahmud, long-time chief minister of Sarawak, I think he was there for 31 years or so, he's now the governor, also said to be a good friend of Tun Dr. Mahathir. Now, this is a conundrum. The man that's leading the charge on institutional reform that's changing Malaysia is also got a very strong relationship with Taib Mahmud. Will Taib Mahmud ever be brought to book for the allegations against him of massive corruption?
Well, I think this is going to be one of the big tests of the new government. Clearly, the Sarawak government has not changed. The state government is still, teetering, but it's still the same people who were very closely allied to the previous BN establishment. I think no one's been unaware of the huge upsurge of, you know, Sarawak voices saying, hey, what about us? You know, is this revolution, for want of a better word, going to reach our shores and change our concerns? And of course, that's something I care a great deal about. And, you know, I think from what we can see, I think this government, this new federal government, is holding Taib Mahmud at arm's length at the moment. And I think it should just allow the due process of the law to proceed in these matters. And I'm sure there will be complaints about corruption in Sarawak that ought to be listened to.
What are you hearing? Are you hearing anything with regards to Sarawak or Taib?
I'm pretty sure that there will be reports and complaints brought forward and demands for investigations. And, of course, there have already been substantial MACC investigations into corruption, both in Sarawak and Sabah, which the previous administration sought to basically leave on a dusty shelf. Now, maybe they'll be taking down those reports and dusting them off a bit.
Claire, do you think that in this new era where media is essentially free, you know, it's much more open, that Sarawak Report's not going to have the same bite that it used to have, at least because it seemed that you were at times one of the single voices out there speaking about these issues? Do you think that Sarawak Report's relevance is going to decline in this era?
I say with total happiness that I feel I'm going to become much less relevant very quickly. And I'm delighted about that. I mean, I know that Malaysia is absolutely buzzing with really good journalists just waiting to just wipe me out. I'm happy about that, you know. I'm not sure where Sarawak Report will go in the future, but I'm expecting to be outclassed very quickly.
Are you working on anything currently? Any new news?
Well, there are a few stories, yes. And that's the problem. It's terrible. Irresistible. You've got so many good stories here in Malaysia.
Oh, it's Malaysia-related.
Malaysia-related stories. Sarawak Report is a Malaysia-focused blog, obviously.
Yeah.
And yes, I've been looking at there are some stories. But, you know, I'm waiting to see you all carry on and take up this whole, you know, narrative now.
But the question remains that many of the mainstream media are still tied to political parties, that even those who are supportive of the Pakatan Harapan government, perhaps wanting to give them some leeway, might censor themselves, you know, in the interest of stability of the Pakatan Harapan government, not push the Pakatan Harapan government, especially the leadership, too hard at this point in time. Is there a danger that, or in fact a possibility, that there will be stories that will be kept under the lid because of these political contingencies?
Well, yes, but I don't think Malaysia is going to be any different from other, you know, democratic countries who have the same issues. We have these issues in the UK. You have, you know, major publications that are politically aligned or aligned with certain interest groups. And it's been a major interference in, you know, our democratic media. Obviously, we benefit from having the BBC in Britain. I would love to be part of any, you know, a review or debate about how Malaysia could better position its media so that it serves the people in the best possible way. You know, I think you do need to think about these issues.
Yeah, I mean, Sarawak Report became the first news website officially to be blocked here in Malaysia in 2015, is back on now. There were a couple of times when you were warned for your own safety. You were placed on police protection as well. So was there ever a time when you asked yourself, why am I doing this? I mean, why are you doing this?
Well, for the reasons I've pointed out, I mean, I think all of you will accept why it was worth doing. I mean, gosh, look where we got. And that was my objective. And it seems like, you know, I could have been running the local PTA or whatever. You know, I felt this was an important thing to do. And if I could help, I would.
Well, what was going through your mind all those years when you were covering the 1MDB stories? I mean, as you combed through the information, piecing the story together, all in the midst of strong and powerful detractors.
I must say, yes, I might think twice about taking on an angry federal government again. You know, it makes for quite a challenging opponent, and they can find many, many ways of making your life extremely difficult, even if you live comfortably with good connections in central London. So it has been tough, yes, but entirely worthwhile, and I have to say, fascinating. I mean, there wasn't a day when I wasn't working on something absolutely riveting in terms of, you know, journalistic challenge. There have been so many stories.
Are you planning to go to Sarawak?
Well, as we've discussed, you know, things have not necessarily, you know, changed in Sarawak. And I'm not at all confident that my name has been removed from their immigration list yet. I am making inquiries and we'll have to see, you know, whether feelings have mellowed towards me in the, you know, positions of power there.
What we did see from some of the numbers coming out of the last general elections was that there is a shift not only in sentiment in urban areas of Sarawak, but also in the rural areas. And I wondered to what extent that project of giving people transistor radios, of setting up a radio station for Sarawak, that still has relevance, considering that, as you put it, the Barisan Nasional is still the state government in Sarawak, and they might not be too eager to have the terms of their relationship change at this point in time.
Well, I have to say that was fantastic, seeing that sort of, you know, tsunami coming out of Sarawak. I don't think anyone expected it, and there's been so much oppression of the rural communities. You know, I ran a radio station with several brave people for, you know, several years that targeted those communities. And definitely, you know, we were getting, every day we were getting calls from villages across Sarawak where they were very, very aware of their situation, unhappy and wanting change. So it doesn't surprise me hugely that they wanted it, that they achieved changing some of those seats. Terrific. And I think that's just the beginning now. I think now they've seen that that change can happen. I, the next state election in Sarawak will be an interesting one to follow.
Well, Claire, a question from a listener. When you've got the information from your source on 1MDB or be it on Sarawak and things like that, why not share the info to Malaysia or, I mean, with the authorities for investigation to be opened, or but instead you choose to publish it in the media?
You mean I should have gone and told Najib what I had on?
Well, or maybe international authorities. That's what she's
asking.
Well,
I did do that. Believe you me. it was quite a balancing act. I wanted to make absolutely sure that various regulators knew that I knew and that I was going public. I mean, you know, you have to do it all. Mm. Obviously, I didn't go, you know, I wasn't public about any, you know, information I'd given to regulators, because you don't talk about that, but I did it. And I think we saw that some of the regulators acted on it. But, you know, it always helps for them to know that there's media coverage of what's going on. It's an incentive for things to be done. So I was doing it all.
Do you think, looking back, that the end result of what you started, what is it a complete surprise? Because there have been many people trying to understand the ecosystem of patronage, of corruption, of the selling of state resources and so on and so forth. I mean, you're not the first, and I imagine it won't be the last. But are you surprised it's ended the way it's ended?
Well, I to an extent I am. I'm delighted. But if I didn't think it was possible, I probably wouldn't have embarked on it. I could see that, you know, if you really held these people to account, if you did the work, frankly, then and you got the information out to people, you could actually get things done. So that's why I did it. Not enough. Your media was constrained. The international media was overlooking. Someone needed to do the job, and I knew it would be a huge job. I wasn't quite how huge, possibly. I hadn't appreciated. But, I felt it was worth doing, and I feel, you know, delighted that we've had this outcome.
Very quickly, the work that you did within the institutional constraints, we talked about that you didn't have the resources that, say, a mainstream media organization would have. Is it possible still to be a one-person show and do this kind of investigative work?
Well, I focused on one issue, so I wasn't trying to invest. I mean, you know, I've had I have had requests now from, you know, Mongolia through to Bangladesh and beyond, in terms of, you know, could I come and sort out their country's corruption issues? And the answer is not really myself, but I would love to, you know, speak to anyone about how you might go about it. It needs focus and determination if you're going to take on something like this.
We're speaking to Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of the Sarawak Report. After the news, we'll come back with more. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and our guest on the Breakfast Grill this morning, Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of the Sarawak Report. If you want to be part of this conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Thank you so much for all your questions. I don't know if we can get through them all. We'll need a day and a half, I think, at this point in time. Claire, I want to begin with accusations that you got the story on EPF being raided wrong, that you were wrong in terms of the facts, and some people even accusing you of trying to spread fake news. What do you say about that EPF story?
Well, that's one of the issues that I hope will be looked at and gone through. There are certainly things that happened there that I have cross-referenced and verified that have been denied by EPF. So let's find out what is true and what isn't true, if some of it isn't true. But there are definitely things that went on. There were definitely attempts to get money out of all the funds, including EPF. And those attempts were definitely connected to the Prime Minister's office and to the Prime Minister himself. And I think that this should be looked at. I hope it's part of the overview. And it was a matter of such importance that I absolutely thought it had to be got out and aired. So that's why I went with that story.
So you're standing by that story?
I'm certainly standing by the accusation mm-hmm. that there were concerted attempts linked to people within EPF and linked to the Prime Minister's office to get money out of that fund and many others. I have cross-referenced those documents that I have got. I've spoken to people across the world who confirm that they were engaged in these activities linked to integrated medical cities.
Well, Claire, we also have a lot of questions on your case with PASS. What's the update on that?
Well, that is continuing. Court cases have their own sort of timetables that have been laid out now. And if we follow that timetable, I guess I will be meeting Mr. Hadi Awang in court sometime at the beginning of next year in London. Going forward, we've now got all sorts of I'm beginning to learn a lot more about how legal cases progress through this experience. And it's extremely expensive. That's what I can tell you. It involves a great deal of money outlaid. I will stick to my guns. I've withdrawn my defense in order to add more material and that will be going in at the end of the month.
Well, and that's very interesting because I think there's a lot of concern about how with media, does stories with allegations that the evidence they have, even if they don't state all the evidence or the sources of the evidence, needs to be able to stand up in a court of law. That they must be, the evidence must have the weight, some sort of legal heft, as it were. Do you feel that you have that in the accusations that you've made about PASS, though? It must be said that many people have noted that there was possible cooperation between, or very likely cooperation between the two parties, UMNO and PASS. Did it involve money, is the question.
What happens when you bring a legal case or you want to bring a legal case against someone is that you go to your lawyers and you say, well, what can we say? And then the lawyers will construct the case. So a case has been constructed which alleges that what I was really saying, although I didn't say it, was that Hadi was taking money from Najib, and that's what they say I meant. But of course, it's not what I said. What I actually commented on, and it was in the course of a comment. One of the things I've been doing in Sarawak Report is articulating things that I felt couldn't be articulated by people here, given the atmosphere. So I was writing, in the aftermath of, a period where, for example, Tun Mahathir was standing on a stage and accusing PASS of receiving DEDAC from UMNO. Now, he was one of the few people who could speak out and not get, banged up as well in Malaysia. So I was one of the people who could report on that widespread belief. And that's what I said, that there was a widespread belief in Malaysia that this money. And the figure I used was based on researches that were produced at that time and that I'd heard of. I've subsequently been forced to look at that relationship a lot more closely, thanks to the legal action, and I have a great deal more, evidence than I did.
Do you have evidence of a BN giving money to PASS?
Short answer is, I believe I do, yes.
When next, then, beyond the case with PASS, for you in terms of your investigations, is there a new story that you're going to be focusing on in the coming months that you want to push forward that you think is going to be of interest to the Malaysian public?
Linked to PASS?
No, not linked to PASS.
Yeah. Well, I think there will be all sorts of spin-offs now, and I think you've got an unfolding drama. I mean, I've never seen so many tired journalists as I have this week in Malaysia. You've had a massive election and then all the aftermath, and I hate to tell you, but it looks as if the story is going to go on rolling. And there's so many uncertainties now, and this will be politically a massive story to continue to cover, I think, as you try to deal with this transition and with resistance in certain quarters. But I think in the course of that, there will be those fundamental corruption issues, those stories about where the money went and how the money went and who's got it and finding it. And I think, that will be of interest to journalists everywhere, and we'll all be keeping our ears open and our eyes open for that.
Well, Javier Justov is in town, if you are watching. Have you met him?
Not yet here in Malaysia.
Will you
but
be meeting?
I knew he was coming.
Okay.
And you know, we're close friends now after what we've all been through.
And can I ask you for the specifics? What story in particular are you interested to pursue and to watch? Beyond the broader question of the transition, you say it's going to be difficult. You say we should be prepared for this unfolding. There will be subplots galore. What is it that you, your top two picks in terms of stories?
Well, I think Sarawak. I think that's my duty. That's my original purpose in getting involved and then getting into the wider story of Malaysia. So I'll be looking with interest at what's going to happen in Sarawak. You know, I can't spill the beans too much about where I'm sleuthing around. But you know, my ears are open, and I think there are all sorts of interesting angles that are going to come out.
Claire, coming back to 1MDB, based on the evidence and linkages, how airtight is the 1MDB case for a swift closure?
Well, I've never read quite such an impressive document as that DOJ. You know, of court filing, which was updated last year, 250 pages of devastating evidence. What's interesting with the 1MDB story is it's actually, although there was enormous complexity about how the money was filtered about and all those interesting little games that they played, it's quite a simple story because, you know, a few very large tranches of money were borrowed. It wasn't a complex scheme. It was a very simple one. And so in that way, it's going to be quite easy to nail it. You know, these tranches of money were borrowed in bonds and then they went off and did, you know, were used on frivolous things.
One last question. Do you think this brainchild of Najib Razak, and that's how he described it initially, was designed as a scam, or did it just, was it something with genuine purpose that got derailed or hijacked along the way?
Well, this is going to be the interesting court argument, isn't it? The intent. And there'll be an awful lot of efforts to put in to say, oh, gosh, I really had meant to, have marvellous investments that were going to be productive for Malaysia. So you've got to counterbalance that with the immediate use of the money. You know, was the money raised to build Tun Razak Exchange, or was it, or in which case, why did it end up 2 days later in Najib's personal account? I think these things will be very easily, tailored and proved.
Okay. One last message from you. What would you like to say to the Malaysian public at this point in time?
Well, I think I just have to say, can I congratulate the Malaysian public on how they've achieved this amazing transfer of power with enormous style and dignity? No upsets, you know, everybody has behaved beautifully in this very, very fraught time. And I think it's an example to everyone, an example for hope. And I think you're just going to rock years coming on forward.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning. We've been speaking to Claire Rucastle-Brown, editor of The Sarawak Report. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh, and this has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U Mobile, where data hearts you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.